going, he breathed, not loosening his grip on her shoulders even as she pressed her dagger to the side of his throat. Get out of my way, she growled, hardly recognizing her own voice. Aerobin can't keep me locked up.
I'm not talking about Aerobin. Use your head and think, Selena.
A flicker of her, a part of her that had somehow vanished since she'd shattered that clock, realized that this might be the first time he'd ever addressed her by her name.
Get out of my way, she repeated,
pushing the edge of the blade harder against his exposed throat.
I know you want revenge, he panted. I do too, for what he did to Sam. I know you.
She flicked the blade, angling it enough that he reared back to avoid her slicing a deep line across his throat.
Don't you understand?
He pleaded, his eyes gleaming in the dark.
It's all just a...
But the fire rose up in Selena, and she whirled, using a move the Mute Master had taught her that summer, and Wesley's eyes lost focus as she slammed the pommel of her dagger into the side of his head. He dropped like a stone. Before he'd even finished collapsing, Selena was sprinting for the fence. A moment later, she jumped it and vanished into the city streets. She was fire. She was darkness. She was dust and blood and shadow. She hurtled through the streets, each step faster than the last, as that black fire burned through thought and feeling, until all that remained was her rage and her prey. She took back alleys and leapt over walls. She'd slaughter them all. Faster and faster, sprinting for that beautiful house on its quiet street, for the two men who had taken her world apart piece by piece, bone by shattered bone. All she had to do was get to Jane and Farron. Everyone else was collateral. Aerobin had said they'd both be in their beds. That meant she had to get past all those guards at the front gate, the front door, and on the first floor. Not to mention the guards that were sure to be outside the bedrooms. But there was an easier way to get past all them. A way in that didn't involve possibly alerting Farron and Jane if the guards at the front door raised the alarm. Harding had mentioned something about a window on the second floor that he could leap through. Harding was a good tumbler, but she was better. When she was a few streets away, she climbed the side of a house until she was on the roof and running again, fast enough to make the leap across the gap between houses. She'd walked past Jane's house enough time in the past few days to know that it was separated from its neighbors by alleys probably 15 feet wide. She leapt across another gap between roofs. Now that she thought of it, she knew there was a second-floor window facing one of those alleys, and she didn't give a damn where that window opened to, just that it would get her inside before the guards on the first floor could notice. The emerald roof of Jane's house gleamed, and Selena skidded to a halt on the roof next door. A wide, flat stretch of the gabled roof stood between her and the long jump across the alley. If she aimed correctly and ran fast enough, she could make that leap and land through that second-floor window. The window was already thrown open, though the curtains had been drawn, blocking any view of what was within. Despite the fog of rage, years of training made her instinctively scan the neighboring rooftops. Was it arrogance or stupidity that kept Jane from having guards on the nearby roofs? Even the guards on the street didn't look up at her. Selena untied her cloak and let it slide to the ground behind her. Any additional drag might be fatal, and she had no intention of dying until Jane and Farron were corpses. The roof on which she stood was 3 stories high and faced the second-floor window across the alley. She factored in the distance and how fast she'd be falling, and made sure the swords crossed to her back were neatly tucked in. The window was wide, but she still needed to avoid the blades catching on the threshold. She backed up as far as she could to give herself running space. Somewhere on that second floor slept Jane and Farron. And somewhere in this house they had destroyed Sam. After she had killed them, perhaps she'd tear the house down stone by stone. Perhaps she'd tear this entire city down, too. She smiled. She liked the sound of that. Then she took a deep breath and broke into a run. The roof was no longer than 50 feet. 50 feet between her and the jump that would either land her right through that open window a level below, or splatter her on the alley between. She sprinted for the ever-nearing edge. 40 feet. There was no room for error, no room for fear or sorrow or anything except that blinding rage and cold, vicious calculation. 30 feet. She raced, straight as an arrow, each pump of her legs and arms bringing her closer. 20. 10. The alley below loomed, the gap looking far bigger than she'd realized. 5. But there was nothing left of her to even consider stopping. Selena reached the edge of the roof and leapt. Chapter 10. The cold kiss of night air on her face. The glitter of the wet streets under lamplight. The sheen of moonlight on the black curtains inside the open window as she arced toward it, hands already reaching for her daggers. She tucked her head into her chest, bracing for impact as she burst through the curtains, ripping them clean off their hangings, hit the floor, and rolled. Right into a meeting room full of people. In a heartbeat, she took in the details. A somewhat small room where Jane, Farron, and others sat around a square table, and a dozen guards now staring at her, already formed into a wall of flesh and weaponry between her and her prey. The curtains were thick enough to have blocked out any light within the room, to make it look like it was dark and empty inside. A trick. It didn't matter. She'd take them all down anyway. The two daggers in her boots were thrown before she was even on her feet, and the guards' dying shouts brought a wicked grin to her lips. Her swords whined, both in her hands, as the nearest guard charged for her. He immediately died, a sword punched through his ribs and into his heart. Every object, every person, between her and Farron was an obstacle or a weapon, a shield or a trap. She whirled to the next guard, and her grin turned feral as she caught a glimpse of Jane and Farron at the other end of the room, seated across the table. Farron was smiling at her, his dark eyes bright. But Jane was on his feet, gaping. Selena buried one of her swords into the chest of a guard so she could reach for her third dagger. Jane was still gaping when that dagger embedded itself to the hilt in his neck. Utter pandemonium. The door flung open, and more guards poured in as she retrieved her second sword from the chest cavity of the fallen guard. It couldn't have been more than 10 seconds since she'd leapt through the open window. Had they been waiting? Two guards lunged for her, swords slicing the air. Her twin blades flashed, blood sprayed. The room wasn't large. Only 20 feet separated her from Farron, who remained seated, watching her with wild delight. Three more guards went down. Someone hurled a dagger at her, and she knocked it aside with a blade, sending it right into the leg of another guard. Unintentional, but lucky. Another two guards fell. There were only a few left between her and the table, and Farron at the other side. He didn't even look at Jane's corpse, slumped on the table beside him. Guards were still rushing in from the hall, but they were all wearing strange black masks, masks with clear glass eyepieces, and some sort of cloth mesh over the mouths. And then the smoke started, and the door shut, and as she gutted another guard, she glanced at Farron in time to see him slide on a mask. She knew this smoke, knew this smell. It had been on Sam's corpse. That musky, strange. Someone sealed the window, shutting out the air. Smoke everywhere, fogging everything. Her eyes stung, but she dropped a sword to reach for that last dagger, the one that would find its home in Farron's skull. The world jolted to the side. No. She didn't know if she said it or thought it, but the word echoed through the darkness that was devouring her. Another masked guard had reached her, and she straightened in time to drive a sword into his side. Blood soaked her hand, but she kept her grip on the blade. Kept her grip on the dagger in her other hand as she cocked it back, angling for Farron's head. but the smoke invaded every pore, every breath, every muscle. As she arched her arm, a shudder went through her body, making her vision twist and falter. She swayed to the side, losing her grip on the dagger. A guard swiped for her, but missed, slicing off an inch from her braid instead. Her hair broke free in a golden wave as she careened to the side, falling so, so slowly, Farron still smiling at her. A guard's fist slammed into her gut, knocking the air out of her. She reeled back, and another fist like granite met her face. Her back, her ribs, her jaw. So many blows, so fast the pain couldn't keep up. And she was falling so slowly, breathing in all that smoke. They had been waiting for her. The invitingly open window. The smoke and the masks were all a part of a plan, and she had fallen right into it. She was still falling as the blackness consumed her.
None of you are to touch her,
a cool, bored voice was saying.
She's to be kept alive.
There were hands on her, prying her weapons out of her grip, then setting her into a sitting position against the wall. Fresh air poured into the room, but she could hardly feel it on her tingling face. She couldn't feel anything. Couldn't move anything. She was paralyzed. She managed to open her eyes, only to find Farron crouched in front of her, that feline smile still on his face. The smoke had cleared from the room, and his mask lay discarded behind him.
Hello, Selena,
he purred. Someone had betrayed her. Not Aerobin, not when he hated Jane and Farron so much. If she'd been betrayed, it would have been one of the wretches in the guild, someone who would have benefited most from her death. It couldn't be Aerobin. Farron's dark gray clothes were immaculate.
I've been waiting a few years to meet you, you know,
he said, sounding rather cheerful despite the blood and bodies.
To be honest,
he went on, his eyes devouring every inch of her in a way that made her stomach start to twist.
I'm disappointed. You walked right into our little trap.
You didn't even stop to think twice about it,
did you?
Farron smiled.
Never underestimate the power of love.
Or is it revenge? She couldn't convince her fingers to shift. Even blinking was an effort.
Don't worry. The numbness from the Gloriella is already fading, though you won't be able to move much at all. It should wear off in about 6 hours. At least that's how long it lasted on your companion after I caught him. It's a particularly effective tool for keeping people sedated without the constraints of shackles. Makes the process much more enjoyable, even if you can't scream as much.
Gods above. Gloriella. The same poison Ansel had used on the mute master. Somehow warped into incense. He must have caught Sam, brought him back here, used the smoke on him, and he was going to torture her, too. She could withstand some torture, but considering what had been done to Sam, she wondered how quickly she'd break. If she'd had control over herself, she'd have ripped out Farron's throat with her teeth. Her only glimmer of hope came from the fact that Aerobin and the others would arrive soon, and even if one of her kind had betrayed her, when Aerobin found out, when he saw whatever Farron had started to do to her, he'd keep Farron alive, if only so when she recovered she could gut him herself. Gut him, and take a damn long time to do it. Farron stroked the hair out of her eyes, tucking it behind her ears. She'd shatter that hand, too, the way Sam's hands had been methodically shattered. Behind Farron, guards began dragging the bodies away. No one touched Jane's corpse, still sprawled on the table.
You know,
Farron murmured,
you're really quite beautiful.
He ran a finger down her cheek, then along her jaw. Her rage became a living thing thrashing inside of her, fighting for just one chance to break free.
I can see why Aerobin kept you as a pet for so many years.
His finger went lower, sliding across her neck.
How old are you anyway?
She knew he didn't expect an answer. His eyes met hers, dark and ravenous. She wouldn't beg. If she were to die like Sam, she'd do so with dignity, with that rage still burning. And maybe she'd get the chance to butcher him.
I'm half tempted to keep you for myself, he said.
He brushed his thumb over her mouth.
Instead of handing you over, perhaps I'll take you downstairs. And if you survive...
He shook his head.
But that wasn't part of the bargain, was it?
Words boiled up in her, but her tongue didn't move. She couldn't even open her mouth.
You're dying to know what the bargain was, aren't you? Let's see if I remember correctly. We kill Sam Cortland,
Farron recited.
You go berserk and break in here, then you kill Jane.
He gave a nod toward the huge body on the table.
And I take Jane's place.
His hands were roving over her neck now, sensual caresses that promised unbearable agony. With each passing second, some of the numbness did indeed wear off. But hardly any control of her body returned.
Pity that I need you to take the blame for Jane's death.
And if only handing you over to the king wouldn't make such a nice gift. The king. He wasn't going to torture her, or kill her, but give her to the king as a bribe to keep royal eyes from looking Farron's way. She could have faced torture, endured the violations she could practically see in Farron's eyes. But if she went to the king, she shoved the thought away, refusing to follow its path. She had to get out. He must have seen the panic enter her eyes. Farron smiled, a hand closing around her throat. Two sharp nails pricked her skin.
Don't be afraid, Selena,
he whispered into her ear, digging his nails in deeper.
If the king lets you survive, I'm in your eternal debt. You've handed me my crown, after all.
There was one word on her lips, but she couldn't get it out, no matter how much she tried. Who? Who had betrayed her so foully? She could understand hating her. But Sam? Everyone had adored Sam, even Wesley. Wesley, he had tried to tell her.
It's all just a...
And his face hadn't been set with irritation, but with grief. Grief and rage. Directed not at her, but at someone else. Had Arobin sent Wesley to warn her? Harding, the assassin who had been talking about the window, had always had an eye on her position as Arobin's heir. And he'd practically spoon-fed her the details about where to break in. How to break in. It had to be him. Maybe Wesley had figured it out just as she was breaking out of the keep. Because the alternative... No. She couldn't even think of the alternative. Farron pulled back, loosening his grip on her throat.
I do wish I'd been allowed to play with you for a bit. But I swore not to harm you.
He cocked his head to the side, taking in the injuries she'd already suffered.
I think a few bruised ribs and a split lip are excusable.
He pulled out a pocket watch.
Alas, it's 11. And you and I both have places to be.
11. An hour before Arobin would even leave the keep. And if Harding had actually been the one to betray her, then he'd probably do his best to delay them even further. Once she was brought to the royal dungeons, what odds did Arobin have of successfully breaking her out? When the Gloriella wore off, what odds did she have of breaking out? Farron's eyes were still on hers, glittering with delight. And then, without warning, his arm slashed through the air. She heard the sound of a hand against flesh before she felt the stinging throb in her cheek and mouth. The pain was faint. She was thankful the numbness was still clinging to her, especially as the coppery tang of blood filled her mouth. Farron gracefully rose from his crouch.
That was for getting blood on the carpet.
Despite the sideways angle of her head, she managed to glare up at him, even as her blood slid down her throat. Farron straightened his gray tunic, then leaned down to turn her head forward. His smile returned.
You would have been delightful to break, he told her, and strode from the room,
motioning to three tall, well-dressed men as he passed. Not petty guards. She'd seen those three men before. Somewhere. At some point that she couldn't quite recall. One of the men approached, smiling, despite the gore pooled around her. Selena glimpsed the rounded pommel of his sword before it connected with her head. Chapter 11. Selena awoke with a pulsing headache. She kept her eyes shut, letting her senses take in her surroundings before she announced to the world that she was awake. Wherever she was, it was quiet and damp and cold and reeked of mildew and refuse. She knew three things before she even opened her eyes. The first was that at least 6 hours had passed, because she could wriggle her toes and fingers, and those movements were enough to tell her that all of her weapons had been removed. The second was that because at least 6 hours had passed, and Aerobin and the others clearly had not found her, she was either in the royal dungeons across the city, or in some cell beneath Jane's house, awaiting transport. The third was that Sam was still dead, and even her rage had been a pawn in some betrayal so twisted and brutal, she couldn't begin to wrap her aching head around it. Sam was still dead. She opened her eyes, finding herself indeed in a dungeon, dumped onto a rotten pallet of hay and chained to the wall. Her feet had also been shackled to the floor, and both sets of chains had just enough slack that she could make it to the filthy bucket in the corner to relieve herself. That was the first indignity she allowed herself to suffer. Once she'd taken care of her bladder, she looked about the cell. No windows, and not enough space between the iron door and the threshold for anything more than light to squeeze through. She couldn't hear anything. Not through the walls, nor coming from outside. Her mouth was parched, her tongue leaden in her mouth. What she wouldn't give for a mouthful of water to wash away the lingering taste of blood. Her stomach was painfully empty, too, and the throbbing in her head sent splinters of light through her skull. She had been betrayed. Betrayed by Harding or someone like him. Someone who would benefit from her being permanently gone, with no hope of ever coming back. And Aerobin still hadn't rescued her. He'd find her, though. He had to. She tested the chains on her wrists and ankles, examining where they were anchored into the stone floor and walls, looking over every link, studying the locks. They were solid. She felt all the stones around her, tapping for loose bits or possibly a whole block that she could use as a weapon. There was nothing. All the pins had been pulled out of her hair, robbing her of a chance to even try to pick the lock. The buttons on her black tunic were too small and delicate to be useful. Perhaps if a guard came in, she could get him close enough to use the chains against him, strangle him or knock him unconscious, or hold him hostage long enough for someone to let her out. Perhaps. The door groaned open, and a man filled the threshold, three others behind him. His tunic was dark and embroidered with golden thread. If he was surprised to see her awake, he didn't reveal it. Royal guards. This was the royal dungeon, then. The guard in the doorway placed the food he was carrying on the floor and slid the tray toward her. Water, bread, a hunk of cheese.
Dinner,
he said, not stepping one foot in the room. He and his companions knew the threat of getting too close. Selena glanced at the tray.
Dinner. How long had she been down here?
Had it been nearly a whole day, and Aerobin still hadn't come for her? He had to have found Wesley by the stables, and Wesley would have told him what she'd gone to do. He had to know she was here. The guard was watching her.
This dungeon is impenetrable, he said, and those chains are made with Adarlanian steel.
She stared at him. He was middle-aged, perhaps 40. He wore no weapons. Another precaution. Usually the royal guards joined young, and stayed until they were too old to carry a sword. That meant this man had years of extensive training. It was too dark to see the three guards behind him, but she knew they wouldn't trust just anyone to watch her. And even if he'd said the words to intimidate her into behaving, he was probably telling the truth. No one got out of the royal dungeons, and no one got in. If it had been a whole day and Aerobin hadn't yet found her, she wasn't getting out either. If her betrayer had been able to fool her, and Sam, and Aerobin, then they'd find a way to keep the King of the Assassins from knowing she was in here too. Now that Sam was dead, there wasn't anything left outside of the dungeons worth fighting for anyway. Not when Otterlin's assassin was crumbling apart, and her world with her. The girl who'd taken on a pirate lord and his entire island. The girl who'd stolen Asterian horses and raced along the beach in the Red Desert. The girl who'd sat on her own rooftop, watching the sunrise over the Avery. The girl who'd felt alive with possibility. That girl was gone. There wasn't anything left. And Aerobin wasn't coming. She'd failed. And worse, she'd failed Sam. She hadn't even killed the man who'd ended his life so viciously. The guard shifted on his feet, and she realized she'd been staring at him.
"The food is clean,"
was all the guard said before he backed out of the room and shut the door. She drank the water and ate as much of the bread and cheese as she could stomach. She couldn't tell if the food itself was bland or if her tongue had just lost all sense of taste. Every bite tasted like ash. She kicked the tray toward the door when she was finished. She didn't care that she could have used it as a weapon or as a lure to get one of the guards closer. Because she wasn't getting out, and Sam was dead. Selena leaned her head against the freezing, damp wall. She'd never be able to make sure he was safely buried in the earth. She'd failed him even in that. When the roaring silence came to claim her again, Selena walked into it with open arms. The guards liked to talk. About sporting events, about women, about the movement of Otterlin's armies. About her, most of all. Sometimes, flickers of their conversations broke through the wall of silence, holding her attention for a moment before she let the quiet sweep her back out to its endless sea.
"The captain's going to be furious he wasn't here for the trial."
"Serves him right for gallivanting with the prince along the Surian coast," sniggers.
"I heard the captain's racing back to Rifthold, though."
"What's the point? Her trial is tomorrow. He won't even make it in time to see her executed." "You think she's really Selena Sardothian?"
"She looks my daughter's age."
"Better not tell anyone. The king said he'd flay us all alive if we breathe one word."
"Hard to imagine that it's her. Did you see the list of victims? It went on and on."
"You think she's wrong in the head? She just looks at you without really looking at you, you know?"
"I bet they needed someone to pay for Jane's death. They probably grabbed a simple girl to pretend it was her."
Snorts. "Won't matter to the king, will it? And if she won't talk, then it's her own damn fault if she's innocent."
"I don't think she's really Selena Sardothian. I heard it'll be a closed trial and execution because the king doesn't want anyone seeing who she really is."
"Trust the king to deny everyone else the chance to watch."
"I wonder if they'll hang or behead her."
Chapter 12. The world flashed. Dungeons, rotten hay, cold stones against her cheek, guards talking, bread and cheese and water. Then guards entered, crossbows aimed at her, hands on their swords. 2 days had passed somehow. A rag and a bucket of water were thrown at her. "Clean herself up for the trial," they said. She obeyed. And she didn't struggle when they gave her new shackles on her wrists and ankles. Shackles she could walk in. They took her down a dark, cold hallway that echoed with distant groans. Then up the stairs. Sunlight shone through a barred window. Harsh. Blinding. As they went up more stairs, and eventually into a room of stone and polished wood. The wooden chair was smooth beneath her. Her head still ached, and the places where Farron's men had struck her were still sore. The room was large, but sparsely appointed. She'd been shoved into a chair set in the center of the room, a safe distance from the massive table on the far end, the table at which 12 men sat facing her. She didn't care who they were or what their role was. She could feel their eyes on her, though. Everyone in the room, the men at the table and the dozens of guards, was watching her. A hanging or a beheading, her throat closed up. There was no point in fighting. Not now. She deserved this. For more reasons than she could count. She should never have allowed Sam to convince her to dispatch Farron on his own. It was her fault. All of it, set in motion the day she'd arrived in Skull's Bay and decided to make a stand for something. A small door at the back of the room opened, and the men at the table got to their feet. Heavy boots stomping across the floor. The guards straightening and saluting. The King of Otterlin entered the room. She wouldn't look at him. Let him do what he wanted to her. If she looked into his eyes, what semblance of calm she had would be shredded. So it was better to feel nothing than to cower before him. The butcher who had destroyed so much of Aurelia. Better to go to her grave numb and dazed than begging. A chair at the center of the table was pulled back. The men around the king didn't sit until he did. Then silence. The wooden floor of the room was so polished that she could see the reflection of the iron chandelier hanging far above her. A low chuckle, like bone against rock. Even without looking at him, she could sense his sheer mass, the darkness swirling around him.
"I didn't believe the rumors until now," the king said. "But it seems the guards were not lying about your age."
A faint urge to cover her ears, to shut out that wretched voice, flickered in the back of her mind.
"How old are you?"
She didn't reply. Sam was gone. Nothing she could do, even if she fought, even if she raged, could change that.
"Did Rourke Farron get his claws on you, or are you just being willful?"
Farron's face, leering at her, smiling so viciously as she was helpless before him.
"Very well, then,"
the king said, papers being shuffled, the only sound in the deathly silent room.
"Do you deny that you are Selena Sardothian? If you do not speak, then I will take your silence for acquiescence, girl."
She kept her mouth shut.
"Then read the charges, Counselor Rensel."
A male throat was cleared. "You, Selena Sardothian, are charged with the deaths of the following people." And then he began a long recitation of all those lives she'd taken. The brutal story of a girl who was now gone. Aerobin had always seen to it that the world knew of her handiwork. He always got word out through secret channels when another victim had fallen to Selena Sardothian. And now, the very thing that had earned her the right to call herself Otterlin's assassin would be what sealed her doom. When it was over, the man said, "Do you deny any of the charges?" Her breathing was so slow. "Girl," the councilman said a bit shrilly, "we will take your lack of response to mean you do not deny them. Do you understand that?" She didn't bother to nod. It was all over anyway.
"Then I will decide your sentence,"
the king growled. Then there was murmuring, more rustling papers, and a cough. The light on the floor flickered. The guards in the room remained focused on her, weapons at the ready. Footsteps suddenly thudded toward her from the table, and she heard the sound of weapons being angled. She recognized the footsteps before the king even reached her chair.
"Look at me."
She kept her gaze on his boots.
"Look at me."
It made no difference now, did it? He'd already destroyed so much of Aurelia. Destroyed parts of her without even knowing it.
"Look at me."
Selena raised her head and looked at the King of Otterlin. The blood drained from her face. Those black eyes were poised to devour the world. The features were harsh and weathered. He wore a sword at his side, the sword whose name everyone knew, and a fine tunic and fur cloak. No crown rested on his head. She had to get away. Had to get out of this room, get away from him. Get away.
Do you have any last requests before I announce your sentence?
He asked, those eyes still searing through every defense she'd ever learned. She could still smell the smoke that had suffocated every inch of Terrasen 9 years ago. Still smell the sizzling flesh and hear the futile screams as the king and his armies wiped out every last trace of resistance. Every last trace of magic. No matter what Aeroben had trained her to do, the memories of those last weeks as Terrasen fell were imprinted upon her blood. So she just stared at him. When she didn't reply, he turned on his heel and walked back to the table. She had to get away. Forever. Brash, foolish fire flared up and turned her, only for a moment, into that girl again.
I do,
she said, her voice hoarse from disuse. The king paused and looked over his shoulder at her. She smiled. A wicked, wild thing.
Make it quick.
It was a challenge, not a plea. The king's council and the guards shifted, some of them murmuring. The king's eyes narrowed slightly, and when he smiled at her, it was the most horrific thing she'd ever seen.
Oh,
he said, turning to face her fully. That foolish fire went out.
If it is an easy death you desire, Selena Sardothian, I will certainly not give it to you. Not until you have adequately suffered.
The world balanced on the edge of a knife, slipping, slipping, slipping.
You, Selena Sardothian, are sentenced to 9 lives worth of labor in the salt mines of Endovir.
Her blood turned to ice. The councilmen all glanced at one another. Obviously, this option hadn't been discussed beforehand.
You will be sent with orders to keep you alive for as long as possible, so you will have the chance to enjoy Endovir's special kind of agony.
Endovir. Then the king turned away. Endovir. There was a flurry of motion, and the king barked an order to have her on the first wagon out of the city. Then there were hands on her arms, and crossbows pointed at her, as she was half-dragged out of the room. Endovir. She was thrown in her dungeon cell for minutes, or hours, or a day. Then more guards came to fetch her, leading her up the stairs, into the still blinding sun.
Endovir.
New shackles, hammered shut. The dark interior of a prison wagon. The turn of multiple locks. The jostle of horses starting into a walk, and many other horses surrounding the wagon. Through the small window high in the door wall, she could see the capital, the streets she knew so well, the people milling about and glancing at the prison wagon and the mounted guards, but not thinking about who might be inside. The golden dome of the Royal Theater in the distance, the briny scent of a breeze off the aviary, the emerald-tiled roofs and white stones of every building. All passing by. All so quickly. They passed the Assassin's Keep where she had trained and bled and lost so much. The place where Sam's body lay, waiting for her to bury him. The game had been played, and she had lost. Now they came to the looming alabaster walls of the city, their gates thrown wide to accommodate their large party. As Selena Sardothian was led out of the capital, she sank into a corner of the wagon and did not get up. Standing atop one of the many emerald roofs of Rifthold, Rourke Farron and Aeroben Hommel watched as the prison wagon was escorted out of the city. A chill breeze swept off the aviary, ruffling their hair.
Endovir, then,
Farron mused, his dark eyes still upon the wagon.
A surprising twist of events. I thought you had planned a grand rescue from the butchering block.
The King of Assassins said nothing.
So you're not going after the wagon?
Obviously not,
Aerobin said, glancing at the new crime lord of Rifthold. It had been on this very rooftop that Farron and the King of the Assassins had first run into each other. Farron had been going to spy on one of Jane's mistresses, and Aerobin...
Well?
Farron had never learned why Aerobin had been meandering across the roofs of Rifthold in the middle of the night.
You and your men could free her in a matter of moments, Rourke went on. Attacking a prison wagon is far safer than what you had originally planned. Though I'll admit, sending her to Endovir is far more interesting to me.
If I wanted your opinion, Farron, I would have asked for it.
Farron gave him a slow smile.
You might want to consider how you speak to me now.
And you might want to consider who gave you your crown.
Farron chuckled, and silence fell for a long moment.
If you wanted her to suffer, you should have left her in my care. I could have had her begging for you to save her in a matter of minutes.
It would have been exquisite.
Aerobin just shook his head.
Whatever gutter you grew up in, Farron, it must have been an unparalleled sort of hell.
Farron studied his new ally, his gaze glittering.
You have no idea.
After another moment of quiet, he asked,
Why did you do it?
Aerobin's attention drifted back to the wagon, already a small dot in the rolling foothills above Rifthold.
Because I don't like sharing my belongings.
After. She had been in the wagon for 2 days now, watching the light shift and dance on the walls. She only moved from the corner long enough to relieve herself, or to pick at the food they threw in for her. She had believed she could love Sam and not pay the price.
Everything has a price,
she'd once been told by a spider silk merchant in the Red Desert. How right he was. Sun shone through the wagon again, filling it with weak light. The trek to the salt mines of Endovir took 2 weeks, and each mile led them farther and farther north, and into colder weather. When she dozed, falling in and out of dreams and reality, and sometimes not knowing the difference, she was often awoken by the shivers that racked her body. The guards offered her no protection against the chill. 2 weeks in this dark, reeking wagon, with only the shadows and light on the wall for company, and the silence hovering around her. 2 weeks. And then Endovir. She lifted her head from the wall. The growing fear set the silence flickering. No one survived Endovir. Most prisoners didn't survive a month. It was a death camp. A tremor went down her numb fingers. She drew her legs in tighter to her chest, resting her head against them. The shadows and the light continued to play on the wall. Excited whispers. The crunching of rushing feet on dried grass. Moonlight shining through the window. She didn't know how she got upright, or how she made it to the tiny barred window, her legs stiff and aching and wobbly from disuse. The guards were gathered near the edge of the clearing they'd camped in for the night, staring out into the tangle of trees. They'd entered Oakwald Forest sometime on the first day, and now it would be nothing but trees, trees, trees for the 2 weeks that they would travel north. The moon illuminated the mist swirling along the leaf-strewn ground and made the trees cast long shadows like lurking wraiths. And there, standing in a corpse of thorns, was a white stag. Selena's breath hitched. She clenched the bars of the small window as the creature looked at them. His towering antlers seemed to glow in the moonlight, crowning him in wreaths of ivory.
Gods above,
one of the guards whispered. The stag's enormous head turned slightly, toward the wagon, toward the small window. The Lord of the North. So the people of Terrasen will always know how to find their way home. She'd once told Ansel, as they lay under a blanket of stars and traced the constellation of the stag, so they can look up at the sky, no matter where they are, and know Terrasen is forever with them. Tendrils of hot air puffed from the stag's snout, curling in the chill night. Selena bowed her head, though she kept her gaze upon him. So the people of Terrasen will always know how to find their way home. A crack in the silence, spreading wider and wider as the stag's fathomless eyes stayed steady on her. A glimmer of a world long since destroyed, a kingdom in ruins. The stag shouldn't be here, not so deep into Otterlin or so far from home. How had he survived the hunters who had been set loose 9 years ago? And yet he was here, glowing like a beacon in the moonlight. He was here. And so was she. She felt the warmth of the tears before she realized she was crying. Then the unmistakable groan of bowstrings being pulled back. The stag, her lord of the north, her beacon, didn't move.
Run!
The hoarse scream erupted out of her. It shattered the silence. The stag remained staring at her. She banged on the side of the wagon.
Run, damn you!
The stag turned and sprinted, a bolt of white light weaving through the trees. The twang of bowstrings, the hiss of arrows, all missing their mark. The guards cursed, and the wagon shook as one of them struck it in frustration. Selena backed away from the window. Backed up, 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 until she ran into the wall and collapsed to her knees. The silence had gone. In its absence, she could feel the barking pain echo through her legs, and the ache of the injuries Farron's men had given her, and the dull stinging of wrists and ankles rubbed raw by chains. And she could feel the endless hole where Sam had once been. She was going to Endovir. She was to be a slave in the salt mines of Endovir. Fear, ravenous and cold, dragged her under. Beginning. Selena Sardothian knew she was nearing the salt mines when, 2 weeks later, the trees of Oakwald gave way to gray, rough terrain, and jagged mountains pierced the sky. She'd been lying on the floor since dawn and had already vomited once, and now she couldn't bring herself to stand up. Sounds in the distance. Shouting, and the faint crack of a whip. Endovir. She wasn't ready. The light turned brighter as they left the trees behind. She was glad Sam wasn't here to see her like this. She let out a sob so violent she had to press her fist to her mouth to keep from being heard. She'd never be ready for this. For Endovir and the world without Sam. A breeze filled the wagon, lifting away the smells of the past 2 weeks. Her trembling paused for a heartbeat. She knew that breeze. She knew the chill bite beneath it. Knew it carried the hint of pine and snow. Knew the mountains from which it hailed. A northern breeze. A breeze of Terrasen. She must stand up. Pine and snow and lazy golden summers. A city of light and music in the shadow of the Staghorn Mountains. She must stand. Or be broken before she even entered Endovir. The wagon slowed, wheels bouncing over the rough path. A whip snapped.
My name is Selena Sardothian,
she whispered onto the floor. But her lips shook hard enough to cut off the words. Somewhere, someone started screaming. From the shift in the light, she knew they were nearing what had to be a giant wall.
My name is Selena Sardothian.
She tried again. She gasped down uneven breaths. The breeze grew into a wind, and she closed her eyes, letting it sweep away the ashes of that dead world, of that dead girl. And then there was nothing left, except something new. Something still glowing red from the forging. Selena opened her eyes. She would go into Endovir. Go into hell. And she would not crumble. She braced her palms on the floor, and slid her feet beneath her. She had not stopped breathing yet, and she had endured Sam's death and evaded the king's execution. She would survive this. Selena stood, turning to the window and looking squarely at the mammoth stone wall rising up ahead of them. She would tuck Sam into her heart, a bright light for her to take out whenever things were darkest. And then she would remember how it had felt to be loved, when the world had held nothing but possibility. No matter what they did to her, they could never take that away. She would not break. And someday, someday, even if it took her until her last breath, she'd find out who had done this to her, to Sam. Selena wiped away her tears as the wagon entered the shade of the tunnel through the wall. Whips and screams and the clank of chains. She tensed, already taking in every detail she could. But she squared her shoulders, straightened her spine. "My name is Selena Sardothian," she whispered. "And I will not be afraid." The wagon cleared the wall and stopped. Selena raised her head. The wagon door was unlocked and thrown open, flooding the space with gray light. Guards reached for her, mere shadows against the brightness. She let them grab her, let them pull her from the wagon. "I will not be afraid." Selena Sardothian lifted her chin and walked into the salt mines of Endovir.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Assassin's Blade, The Throne of Glass novellas. Written by Sarah J. Mass, narrated by Elizabeth Evans. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2014 by Sarah J. Mass. Production copyright 2014 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc. If you enjoyed this audiobook, be sure to get more books in the Throne of Glass series today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.